Traditionally, in Buddhist meditation practice, whether it's the one or a group, whenever one would undertake a practice, a meditation practice, or really any type of activity, even such a thing as a Dharma talk, one would always begin by stating the intention. And the intention usually refers to a wish for the well-being of everyone. And with the intention that one is undertaking this practice, even the practice of meditation, or even the practice of giving a talk, or even the practice of listening to a Dharma talk, that the intention is to utilize whatever one has gained or will gain from, again, the meditation or the talk or the knowledge or the learning or whatever. One will be using that for the benefit of others. And that even if in the short term we are here to benefit ourselves, that we are benefiting ourselves, or wanting or seeking to benefit ourselves, so we will be more able to be of benefit for others. And stating this kind of intention at the beginning of any type of practice, again, states and restates and restates over and over again our sense of interdependence with all beings, our awareness of what is going on in the world, not just in our own life, and our sense that our spiritual practice, or whatever we may call it, has a context larger than simply to relieve our own suffering, or to bring benefits of all of different kinds, not only to ourselves, but that we want to undertake that for others. And this kind of wish, or this kind of intention, is something that has to be stated over and over and over and over again, because we tend to so easily get lost in our own selfness, we might say. So get lost in our own needs and wants, our own difficulties or challenges, and lose this sense that that we are not the only ones going through this. Perhaps, to one degree or another, everyone is. And that with this understanding of the commonality, we might say, of the human condition and of the human predicament, to be mild about it, we understand that our own seeking for a certain degree of greater freedom and openness, liberation, enlightenment in our life is also something that we wish for everyone, as well as we are hoping that our own efforts, to whatever degree, may be of benefit to others. And beginning to kind of plant those seeds of this greater vision and intention of what our personal life is about, and what our spiritual life is about, I think is very important, because we are planting seeds within the mind, and seeds that are just like in the material world, the physical world, in the same way that seeds that are well taken care of will grow. And will grow, and from seeds to seedlings to plants, and then will come to some sort of fruition. In the same way that we know that if we cultivate these positive seeds within ourselves on a consistent basis over time and space, that they will grow too. And where will they manifest? They will manifest in our minds, and if they manifest in our minds, they will manifest in our actions of our body and our speech. So we will kind of be a complete package at one day. And again, it also helps us understand that this work of personal healing and transformation is not something that occurs overnight. But just like, you know, the same way a seed will not become a full-blown plant and flower and everything overnight, but has its own kind of timetable. And that timetable will certainly manifest and occur and come to fruition if that cultivation is consistent. So in the same way, we need to understand that if we are very aware of the seeds we want to plant in our minds, and we are very good caretakers of those seeds, they will grow and they will manifest, and it cannot be otherwise. That's a pretty bold statement. It cannot be otherwise. In the same way, if we are cultivating seeds that we really don't want to be kind of covering the window so you can't see out, you know what I'm saying, that kind of overgrowth. If we are cultivating seeds and plants that are not really what we want growing, and that they, when they grow wild in the garden of our mind, they cover the windows, which means our capacity to see out, to see clearly. Light does not get in to a window that is covered. So we have to be as careful that we are not growing plants and cultivating seeds that we don't want growing in our mind. Many people kind of are not happy with the state of their mind. They wish it was otherwise. They are not happy with the state of their, the kind of emotions and the kind of mind states that arise in their mind. And they really wish it was with otherwise, right? But those mind states and those emotional states that are present in our mind are only there because we are cultivating them. And we have cultivated them. And so they will continue to grow. They do not come from outside us. They come from inside us. So we have to understand that this kind of careful cultivation of seeds is a commitment. But that if we understand that, and if we are consistent and persistent in our cultivation, there is no doubt, again, that the seeds we want to grow will grow, and that the seeds that we don't want to continue to grow will not grow. And again, that is not an overnight guarantee, but it certainly is a lifetime guarantee. But before we get into anything, it's been a month since I was down here. We had a very good meeting yesterday of a different kind of, not a traditional day of mindfulness, more of a day of practicing together and sharing together and looking deeply into some very key questions. And maybe, I know some of you were there yesterday, and maybe things got stirred up a little bit. So, So, and some of you weren't there, but that's... So why don't we begin? Are there any questions that anybody has? Yes.
It's taking courage to bring this up.
Mm-hmm.
I have a 40-year-old son that, out of my control and his control when he was younger, experienced a lot of trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And he's been very successful in his life up until a couple of months ago. I see him ruining his life.
Mm-hmm.
And I know a mother with a broken heart.
You're a mother with a broken heart to see this.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. Is there more that you want to say? Yeah. Yeah. So Angie wants me to repeat. Yeah, so she was sharing that she has a 40-year-old son and that in his earlier life, he experienced significant traumatic events, but he seemed, for I guess a good while, to be doing quite well. And yet, recently, it seemed as if maybe this is not the right word, but sort of possessed by his demons, and seems to be on a path of self-destruction. Yeah. And that is somewhat related to what we just talked about. Yeah. And again, the seeds within us, positive and negatively, were not all consciously planted by us. Most of them actually weren't. Right? The events, situations, experiences, they all are incorporated. You know, parents, family, situation, schools, society, many seeds are planted, and especially in childhood. Because we know childhood, the mind of a child, is a very open mind. It's a very non-discriminating mind. It's a non-judgmental mind. It's an undeveloped mind. And so we know that many things that happen to us or people in childhood just kind of go in without a lot of discrimination, right? And there they sit. And like you say, some of those manifest right away, right? And some of them stay latent, right? And it's the analogy in Buddhist psychology of calling these things seeds, I think is very intelligent, I mean, and practical, because we know, right? I mean, they can find seeds from thousands of years ago, and if they've been preserved in a right way, the right conditions, they will. So the latency often of the seeds, certain types of seeds, can be quite long term. And it's very, I think, much that way in the human psyche. And there are oftentimes things that happen, experience that happen, traumatic things, painful things that leave deep wounds in our hearts and psyches. And oftentimes they are a latent vulnerability that only come out in certain conditions. And that is why, like you say, you saw these very significant events happen to him early on, and yet he seemed to do okay. But the thing is that oftentimes these things are just there, deep. And certain kind of life events or situations can happen, and they come up with a force and a power, and they take over somebody's life. Obviously, if your son can get some sort of help, you know, so he can understand what's happening to him, and, you know, in some kind of coherent way, deal with the pain and the trauma that is now arising, that would be wonderful, wouldn't it? And so you have two roles. On one hand, you have the heart of a mother, which means your heart aches for your son because he is suffering, right? And he's, in a sense, part of you, part of your heart, and that help can't help but hurt, right? And you can't help but wanting to do something to help him. Yeah, and again, that is a natural, that's just normal, right? Normal, natural and normal. But, and you've heard me say before, those you've come, that in Buddhism, compassion has to be balanced with wisdom. Because compassion just by itself does not have the eye of intelligence. So often just feeling somebody suffering and wanting to relieve it doesn't mean we have the capacity to do it. And it doesn't mean that we may not even actually, even though we are good-hearted, make more of a mess of things. You know what I'm saying? So it is important that at the same time it is our heart, it is our compassion that brings us into touch with the suffering of another and gives us that desire to help and do something. But if that capacity for wisdom doesn't also come into balance, we may, again, either be ineffective or mess things up more. So even though it is hard, you know, that capacity that for yourself to really look at what is really going on here, you know, and what is the suffering really about, and what's causing it, and is there anything that can be done that I can do, or is it beyond me? I mean, sometimes we have to admit. That one, oftentimes, people in situations or problems that people get into are of such complexity that you know, it's beyond us to be anything but just a supportive presence. But you know, we really don't have the skills or the ability to help somebody in an area. But also, sometimes a person does not want us. You know, they are just so in control by what is arising within them and this path they are on, that even though it is, it can break one's heart to see it, because you look at it and you go, you know, but there, you know, there are other ways. This can be taken care of. This is not unknown. I mean, you know, and you sort of know that, you know, things can be done, and yet the person is seems hell bent. And you realize there is an irrational quality to it, yeah. And that's just the truth. You know, I mean, that's why at its very worst, you know, at the very extreme, there are things like in Florida, the Baker Act, and other kinds of things where you realize, this person just driving, you know, at 90 miles an hour into a wall, and on their own, they're not going to stop. You know, so is there anything from outside that can stop them? But that's very extreme, that situation. Sometimes it's not so extreme, and it takes a good bit of understanding just to go, you know, there's something occurring here that I can't control, and it seems to need to play out. I don't know how it's going to play out. All I can do is offer my presence, and you know. Maybe at some point he'll be open, but it's not now. And sometimes it is our, again, this is our good heart, but oftentimes, you know, it is our wanting to come in that we often drive the person away, right? Because they see us as, you know, they don't want us there. And so we, by our coming, it puts up a wall and almost drives them further away. So sometimes it's hard, you know, to be willing to be present to somebody in that suffering and know that one cannot do anything. I mean, one doesn't want to facilitate it and enable it or anything, but on the other hand, one cannot stop it. There's something, you know. And again, I'm sure there are many people here who understand what I'm talking about, have been there with themselves or with other people, and you know, that's just part of, I think, an acceptance of the world as it is. You know, there's all kinds of, we might say, I mean, you know, I mean, he's your son, so it's special, but if I said to you, you're not the only mother in this world, right? You know, I mean, we have to realize this is not so uncommon an experience, a human experience, to be involved with loved ones and to see them on paths which to us are clearly unworkable, destructive, or whatever, and yet, you know, even though, you know, we see clearly, we know a better way, and we certainly could tell them all about it, right? They're not ready to stop, and they're not really open to listening to us. And the world is the same way, right? You know, if you look at what's going on in this world, there's all kinds of things going on in this world, right? And they're not asking our advice, are they? Right, Robin? They're just not asking our advice. And we have good advice to give them, don't we? And they're just not interested. And so that's kind of humbling truth, too. But again, you know, it doesn't mean to give up and despair. It just really realizes, you know, in helping people, you know, sometimes timing is everything. You know, so you stay present, you don't separate from, and you're just watchful. And you look for opportunities, you know, when it comes, to step in. Good, other questions are about practice and life. Is that a... Oh, okay. Think about your mindfulness practice, your daily life. Is there anything that is not clear, how to deal with something? Any challenge or obstacle in your life that you're not clear about how to deal with? So the silence means that everybody's clear? Because if you're not clear, there's no reason to be shy. We're all in this together, so to say. Say yesterday at this day that we had together at the really nice what's it called, the that building's part of our hospice
in Spirea,
a new facility they've built. It's really quite beautiful on the lake, and we've been using it for days of mindfulness and that practicing mindfully together, a day of teachings, meditation, practice, self-inquiry, and deep sharing. And one of the things, and we won't go into it, but just for those who aren't there, one of the things that I presented were a series of questions for people to reflect on. It was emailed to them several days before, and we spent a lot of time in guided meditation on them. Questions about life, you know, what questions does one have about their life and the meaning of life and purpose of life and the whys and wherefores of life, and questions about why we suffer and where is the suffering in our life and what is suffering, and you know, even though questions about, even though we have intentions for healing and transformation and to live a certain kind of life and be a certain kind of way, what gets in the way? What are the obstacles that prevent us from really living out these deepest yearnings of our heart? So there were these, day was spent in a lot of reflection. And one of the things that I presented to the group was, it's very important that our spiritual life be driven by these type of personal questioning. And that our spiritual life does not simply mean that we are doing quote-unquote spiritual practices or reading spiritual books or attending spiritual talks, right? But that there's a little, what do they call it, a fire in the belly. We have a little fire in the belly about life, about our life. And that this kind of deeper searching within ourselves is what is motivating and energizing our quote-unquote our spiritual life. And that many people who find that they don't have a lot of energy in their spiritual life, in their meditative life, and don't have a lot of consistency, and are just kind of going through the forms and are kind of the practice and kind of force themselves like a discipline, but really, again, there's no juice in their practice. It's often because we are not taking the time to stop and look more deeply into life, our own life, our own situation. And the spiritual life is predicated on asking the right questions, the questions that stir things up, that kind of get us, you know, looking more deeply, seeking for answers. So we spent a lot of time yesterday talking about that, and how to learn to stop and to disengage from all the outflow of endless activity and involvement, etc., and to take the time to step back and to look more deeply and ask those deeper questions about our life and how it's going and how am I really and what really is my mind. I mean, one time I asked people, if you looked at your mind and you kind of watched it from the time you got up in the morning to the time you went to bed, where is it all day? And what is the content? I mean, you know, if your intention is to, let's say, have a peaceful mind or a calm mind or an open mind or a loving mind or a clear mind, how often is that, as you know, in your day, is that really a very consciously being cultivated by you? You know, many people have a good meditation spiritual practice when they get up in the morning. Have you known? You know, and they do their practice, they do their meditation, they do their readings, and they're right, and they're kind of on target, and then they go out the door, and then somehow the day just disappears, and somehow that connection with that person who was there that morning with a certain kind of mindset and a certain type of intention is lost. It's like different people. And so how do we create a greater congruency in our life, and that this that the way we want to be and the way we want to manifest and all that in life is a consistent part of our daily life, no matter where we are, whether we're home, whether at work, whether with family, whether we're out and about, whatever it is, there is a consistency that the one who is driving the car is always has their hand on the wheel, right? So anyhow, we had these questions yesterday. You know, they said to me, these are questions that really predicate the desire to engage oneself in a spiritual path, a spiritual life, you know, in the loosest sense of what that means. But then there's another way to look, which is, okay, I want to, I want to follow some kind of spiritual path, some sort of meditative path. So again, the question is, well, why am I doing this? And traditionally in Buddhist, the Buddhist meditation tradition, the Zen tradition, there is kind of a way of looking at this in a sequential way. And I wanted to just talk about that for a little bit this evening. One could say at the first level of intention, the intention is simply a kind of it's more around physical and mental health, let's say, in a very simple way. One may want to meditate and adopt various kinds of meditative principles and mindfulness because one has a lot of stress in one's life, right? And one just kind of has a lot of, the mind is not relaxed. It's agitated, it's stressed. So it wants to learn mindfulness, meditation, to get some relief. Or one may be suffering from kind of psychogenic or psychosomatic kind of physical things in one's body that seem to have maybe a root in stress or in other kinds of maladaptive ways. So at that level, one is purely undertaking a meditative experience, simply kind of for basic physical and mental health at the simplest level ways. And again, there's nothing wrong with that, but it's just acknowledging that that's kind of one's approach. The next level could be more that one kind of wants to use meditation and mindfulness for a certain kind of energy, a certain kind of focus that one wants to use in one's life. Traditionally in Asia, that was often in the martial arts. One would cultivate meditation and things like that because one developed qi, a certain kind of energy in their body. Or warriors would want to learn how to meditate so they could be very focused in their swordsmanship or something like that. These days, we know that people often want to learn mindfulness or meditation so they can be more productive at work, right? Be more focused, things like that. So we find meditation and things like that now being taught within the business world and corporate world, or a student may want to learn how to meditate so they can be more focused in their studies. So again, this is another used from understanding the benefits that come from meditation, but it's, I would say, still hasn't entered any kind of spiritual path at all. Do you know what I'm saying? It's really just for simply a kind of worldly benefits. And again, I'm not putting it down, I'm just trying to acknowledge that in one's entrance into a into one's interest in meditation, there are various levels. The next level could be, we could say, the beginning to enter a broader use or commitment in the use of the meditative path. And that is clearly when it is around, one sees that one is suffering. That one is suffering from this mind that seems to go wherever it wants. One is suffering from a mind that is creating various types of dramas and melodramas and afflictive emotional states that cause significant suffering to oneself or to others. And so one understands that the practice of meditation and mindfulness and sort of, you know, meditative principles like that can be very helpful in kind of getting some insight into their mind and helping to change their mind in a positive way so there is less suffering. So we're kind of moving up a notch. Well, the next step would be probably incorporate all the ones before. But here one is on a path of, we could say, development. One actually wants to begin to cultivate certain types of mind states, certain positive mind states. One wants to not only just remediate or lessen one's personal, more drastic kinds of suffering, but one actually wants to be what? Let's say a happier person, a happy person, a calm person, a caring person, a loving person, a compassionate person. So one is now cultivating a more altruistic view of life, and one, we could say, is incorporating the practices of meditation and mindfulness and concentration and other kinds of things in the service of the development of these positive mind states. And then finally, there is, and especially this is key to Buddhism, that one is practicing a spiritual path for insight, for understanding. We could say that up to now we have transcended, we have walked a path that is probably all incorporated within the wide varieties of religious experience. Right. But in the final piece, which in Buddhism is the highest aspiration or path to walk, is a path where one really wants to understand things deeply. Who am I? What really am I? You know, am I this voice of self and I that I hear inside me always telling me to do this and do that and feel this way? Is that who I am? I read or I hear that, you know, I am one with the universe. I am part of something much greater. I am interconnected with everything. But I don't experience that. I want to experience that. Right? I want to be really liberated from all types of constricting mental states. I want to be free. Right? I want to return to my true natural spontaneous mind, you see. So this is the kind of deeper, higher level that one's to inspire to. And traditionally in Zen, one undertakes a training with a teacher. Now, the teacher will ask us, what is your, you know, we'll kind of set out these four or five different paths and say, well, what is yours? And the reason that is done is because each of those different paths, a different kind of teaching and practice would be applicable, right? And I bring that to your attention because I think it's important that each of us kind of be aware, continuing from yesterday in an introspective, reflective way, you know, where am I? And I know that I go to meditation and I try to meditate, or I do meditate, and I read, and I listen to Dharma talks, and I go to retreats, and you know what I mean? But if I'm really more introspective with myself, what really is my aspiration? Because the aspiration then leads to, then what are the practices and the types of study that I should be doing, right? Because at every different path and every different level, different practices, different kinds of study, are necessitated. So it's very beneficial for us to be really clear about, my path and where I am going.
You're talking about, you know, finding your higher purpose, finding your voice. And I get that. I mean, as a young man, growing into middle-aged man, I understand kind of, I think, what you mean. But to go from one state of a lifestyle to the new state of a lifestyle, mm-hmm. you are living, you know, towards your goals, changing the type of, you know, exercises you do or whatever you're doing on that life path,
mm-hmm.
has to do with change.
Yes.
So you're talking about change.
Yes, definitely.
In my life, I kind of know where I want to go with my life, but I find a lot of resistance.
Yeah.
A lot. I find change, real change, difficult.
Yeah.
For instance, I'm trying to, like an example, study more around the field I'm very passionate about, different aspects that have to do with this, you know, direction I'm going. But it's hard to change my old lifestyle, my old patterns. Maybe you can elaborate on the changing process to get to where you're more in where you want to be.
Right. So, good. Yeah, you should have been there yesterday because that's what we're dealing with. But it's okay. I'm only just giving you a hard time. So the question was, the question he's asking is, I kind of have a sense of, you know, the life I want to be leading and how I want to be doing it. And I kind of have a sense of kind of what I've got to begin to do to kind of get me there. And, you know, it's all kind of clear to me. And yet that seems to be over here and I'm over here and I can't seem to get going. How do you get going? And he used the word, which I think is a key word for all of us. How do I change? Right? How do I change? And again, let me just to keep in the context of what we're talking about. To me, spiritual life is only about change. When we use the word transformation, we're talking about change. Right? I'm changing. I'm changing the direction. You know, you know, to follow a spiritual path means I'm changing the direction of my life. I am no longer. I no longer have the same goals. I no longer have the same values. I'm no longer interacting in the same way, right? I'm moving my life in a very different direction. It's interesting. In one aspect of Buddhism, there's this word bodhicitta. I don't know if I probably talked about it, but you mean it's a Sanskrit word. It means the enlightened mind, okay? And it's a very kind of key thing that everyone has this enlightened mind, but to want to manifest it, to want to realize it, and to want to share it with others is kind of this bodhicitta. Right, which we could say, well, whatever is this positive direction you want to take your life, that's what you want. And he talks about two things, this is Shantidevi. He talks about bodhicitta of intention and bodhicitta of action. And he's very clear. First of all, that one, he says that the intention comes before the action. But two, if you're going to compare the two, the action, in a certain sense, is more important than the intention because that's actually the manifesting of it. But you can't get there without the intention. Okay. So to facilitate that energizing that change, right? There are two things. I mean, they're big things. It's sort of like the carrot and the stick bread, okay? So one has to be willing to take a very clear, unvarnished look at life as it is before the change, right? You know, like being sick and tired of being sick and tired. Or like this life that I thought was so much fun and I was really having a great time is really a disaster. You see, you know what I mean? So it's where you are willing to look at life and kind of see that all the ways you've been doing it, while it's not necessarily bad, has not produced what you want. And that really has produced a lot of difficulty frustration, sadness, loneliness, you know what I mean? Frustration, you know, who knows what, okay? But the willingness to take that unvarnished look at one's life and admit its unworkability is important. And that needs to be reflected on all the time. Because why? Because we forget. Right? Because this mind of ours is so fickle and untrained, we forget. Right? And we just keep doing the same stuff over again. Why? Because we forget. Because we really it hasn't struck home to us that this way of living is fundamentally unsatisfactory. It will not get me where I want. So that has to be reflected on constantly until you get it. And I know you know what I'm talking about, right? People don't change their behavior until they get it. That the way they're doing, right? You know, there are many people who you look at their life and you go, wow, what a miserable life. And yet they think they're, you know, they think they got it made, right? I mean, if you ever hung around alcoholics and addicts and right? You know what I'm talking about? They think, well, we're having great fun here. This is great. But the truth is what? It's not all it's cracked up to be, is it? Okay. So you have to get that. And when you get that, and you really get it, then you are motivated to do something different. Which means what? Change. Right? Now, so in the same way that half the quotient is really getting, it's taking a deep look at life as it's being lived, and seeing that it's just not working. It's just not working. It does not produce what it's supposed to the way I'm going about it. All right. So I need another way. All right. I need another way. But I only know this way. But I need another way. All right. So one has to find a way for oneself. Just now, just in the realm of intention. You haven't walked it yet. Right? Where do I want to go? Right? I'm sick of living in Naples. Right? But where do I want to live? What do I want to do? Once you know where you want to go, right? Now you know you want to leave here, and you know you want to get there. Right? But this is all going on where? Just in your mind. So now what you're saying is, okay, I got to begin to take some very concrete steps. Taking those concrete steps will be energized by two things. One is how much you want to get out of Naples, right? Two is how much you want to get to where you're going. So the reflection, and I have nothing against Naples, but I'm just using that as a very simple example, all right? So it is a kind of a quotient, right? Between how much you are clearly seeing that your life here is done, and you want something different, and that's clear, and you know it, and it's very much part, with same time a very clear sense of where you want to go. That energizes you. Right? If this energizes you, right? If your goals, whatever they are, the change you want to make, the life you want to lead, has to be something that you feel passionate about. You go, I want that. I want to live that way. I'm sick of this. Okay. So now there's energy, right? There's energy to leave. That's kind of a negative energy, but there's a positive energy that's pulling me in that direction. Okay, and now it's exciting, right? All right, I got to prepare for this journey. You know, what do I got to get, and what do I got to do, and you know, what steps do I take? But you have to be patient, and you have to be realistic that it's not going to be overnight. Right, so you can't be compulsive, right? But you have to be very clear. You know where you want to go. You've investigated. You know it's very realizable, right? It can all be done, you know. And now you want to do it, and you know. So you take the steps you need. You may begin to read about it, you know, give them steps. You may find a guide and a mentor and some good friends who might make the journey with you to make it easier. Right? Those are often helpful, aren't they? Right? I mean, if you're going on a journey and it's a little bit unknown, it's good to have friends along the way to support you. Because sometimes you may lose track of things, but somebody else may remember. And you can support each other, inspire each other. You also may need a guide, a mentor, right? Somebody who's kind of been there, who knows the terrain. So you don't have to feel, you know, I got to do this all on my own. And usually if you have all that, it'll work. Right? And then, you know, are you committed? You got to ask yourself that question. Am I committed? You know, what is this resistance? Do I doubt my ability? Right? That could be a personal quality. Do I doubt my ability to change? Right? Do I say that I want to change and live that way, but do I really believe it? That's possible. You know, so if you say you have resistance, you should look right at that resistance. What's doing it? Because it all makes sense, right? So there seems to be a part of me that's still holding back. What is that part of me? Right? You know, you want to know that part of yourself. Is that clear? Or not? Yeah. Yeah, so, you know, again, sometimes, it's easier to say it than do it, you know. You have to ask yourself, wow, if I really say that's the life I want, then why don't I do it, right? Am I really that committed? Do I really want to change? Am I really, you know, have I really hit bottom? Or, you know, do I have, you know, a few more steps to fall down? You know, I mean, am I fooling myself? So we got to be very honest.
It feels like a step into the unknown, you know, like if you've seen it in a movie or your father's done it before, you see it. In my case, it doesn't, you know.
Yeah, but that's why...
I'm following everything you're saying.
Yeah, but that's why, Brad, as I said to you, that's why it's important, you know, that you put yourself in situations where you encounter people who tell you, yeah, who live it and have done it and can say, yeah, this is all doable. Yeah, I understand for you it's new and it seems, you know what I'm saying? But, so, again, that's, in Buddhism it's called confidence. Trust and confidence are very big. Confidence in the path, confidence in the goal, and confidence in one's ability to achieve it. You know, without that trust or confidence, it's very hard. Again, when you're talking about things that you haven't experienced yourself, right, then you have to have confidence in the guide. You have to have confidence in the guidebook. Right? Oh, this is a good guidebook. Yeah, it's really clear, and the steps are clear, and yeah, I can. It looks, you know, it's sold 100,000 copies. I mean, you know, I've read about, many people have used it. Right? Yeah, this is a good map. This is a good guidebook. Yeah, this is a good guide. He's been doing it for years. Oh, all right. So I can have confidence. I can have trust. But that means taking a step into that. Thank you. So we'll stop. It's 8:30.